Observance of Good Friday. We'll stay with Morning Edition and more Morning Edition ahead at 9 a.m. Coming up in the next couple of minutes on Morning Edition, a high-speed training firm known as Virtual Financial has decided to put off its IPO indefinitely. The move caps a rough week in the IPO market. Mostly sunny skies today around the region, a high of 65, mostly clear tonight, the low 38 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, the high around 70, mostly clear for Saturday evening, a low of 42, and on Easter Sunday, a high of 75 degrees. 43 in Decatur, 49 in Danville. It's 53 now on Friends Plaza.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
NPR's business news starts with wiring from Walmart. The giant retailer is taking another step into banking. The company says it's launching a money transfer service next week. It'll go head-to-head with Western Union and MoneyGram in a market worth about $900 billion. But Walmart says it will offer lower fees. Western Union and MoneyGram's stock both dropped on the news.
All right, Virtue Financial has reportedly decided to postpone its initial public offering. The decision comes during a week when several IPOs in U.S. markets had disappointing debuts. Virtue conducts high-frequency electronic trading on various exchanges, and scrutiny of high-speed trading is growing. NPR's Jim Zirulli reports.
New York-based Virtue Financial is one of the most profitable high-frequency trading firms around and one of the biggest. It was supposed to go public this month and was hoping to raise as much as $250 million. But the firm decided to put off its stock offering amid heightened scrutiny of high-speed trading. And yesterday, the Wall Street Journal reported that the postponement would be indefinite. High-frequency trading firms such as Virtue use ultra-fast computer networks to trade stocks. Critics say they bring volatility to the markets, and the controversy has mushroomed after the publication of Michael Lewis's book, Flash Boys. Meanwhile, federal and New York state regulators are investigating whether some of the firms have an unfair advantage over other traders. The decision to postpone Virtue's IPO comes in a week when technology stock prices have been especially volatile, and that's taking a toll on the IPO market. Jim Zirulli, NPR News, New York.
In China, there's a phrase that refers to a certain demographic. Educated, professional women in their late 20s or a little older who are still single. They're called leftover women.
This group of women is growing rapidly in the cities. They're facing an unprecedented unmarried crisis.
An unmarried crisis. That's from Chinese state TV. Newspapers also use the phrase, which was coined by the government a few years back. Sociologist Leita Han Fincher tracks how leftover women is used in the media.
I mean, it's absolutely everywhere. They put out all sorts of news reports and columns and commentaries and cartoons, by the way, that are very insulting.
Fincher's new book is called Leftover Women. She told us the government is essentially trying to shame women into getting married, partly because officials are worried about the surplus of unmarried men in China.
There are actually 20 million more men under the age of 30 than women under the age of 30. And so this sex ratio imbalance is seen as a threat to social stability because the government is afraid that these unmarried men will be restless and cause all kinds of trouble. So that's a reason to really push educated women in particular to marry so that they can reduce this proportion of surplus men.
But it doesn't really make sense. I mean, even if every single quote unquote leftover woman gets married, it's not going to solve the problem.
No, of course not. But I believe that the term leftover woman is in part a backlash against the tremendous educational gains that Chinese women have made over the past decade or more. So as women get more educated, they naturally want to delay marriage and they want to spend more time furthering their careers. And the government doesn't want that happening because it wants educated women who are considered to be higher quality by the government. It wants them to be having children for the good of the nation.
And one of the points you make in the book is that not only are Chinese women getting educated more and more, but in Chinese in general are becoming more and more wealthy, yet most of this newfound wealth is going to men. How did this happen?
Marriage is inextricably linked with home buying in China, and women tend to transfer their life savings over to the man when they're getting married to finance the purchase of this very expensive home. But then they're forfeiting ownership of the home by leaving their name off it.
Why don't they sign that deed?
There are some women who simply accept this norm that the man is supposed to be the official homeowner and the woman doesn't really need to own property. But actually, a lot of young, particularly educated women really want economic independence. But because homes are so expensive, the woman tends to, even though she initially fights to have her name to get on the deed, she tends to just give in at the very end. And because I think that even though they want their name on the deed, more than that, they want to get married because they're afraid that if they walk away from this marriage proposal, that they'll never find another husband.
In the book, you say that women were better off, you know, before China opened up to the free market reforms, back when it was, you know, a real communist country. How is that possible?
Well, I don't exactly say that they were better off.
Fair enough.
I'm talking about the inequality between women and men. So women materially are certainly better off today than they were a generation ago. So I'm talking about the gap, the wealth gap in particular, between women and men. And with the onset of market reforms and the spectacular real estate boom, women, I argue, have largely been shut out of that accumulation of wealth.
Leta Hong Fincher is a sociologist at Beijing's Tsinghua University and the author of the new book, Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
And our last word in business today is Wonderful Wife. It's the name of a women's magazine in Japan. It used to be a top seller back when more women stayed home and took care of their kids.
But times have changed. As more women work, even after having kids, Wonderful Wife has plunged in circulation. So the publisher says it's taking Wonderful Wife off the racks and replacing it with a new magazine aimed at working mothers.
It will be called Shanto, meaning properly or correctly. It's just too bad they didn't just go with It's a Wonderful Life, isn't it? I mean, that would have been I don't know, maybe that's taken. That's the business news on Morning Edition from NPR News. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. It was arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm David Green.
And I'm Kelly McEvers.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations. And from CarMax, offering more than 35,000 used cars and trucks, online and in stores from coast to coast. Learn more at CarMax.com. From Regis, a global solution for growing companies, offering flexible workspace in 1,800 locations worldwide. More at Regis.com/radio. From Carbonite, automatic and encrypted cloud backup solutions designed for small business. Details at Carbonite.com. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
This week, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me tries to actually be good for you. We study history with Doris Kearns Goodwin, classical music with Emmanuel Axe, and politics with Senator Jeff Flake. I'm Peter Sagal. Now that Oprah's off the air, somebody's got to help you people with this stuff. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Saturday at 10 a.m. and Sunday at noon on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580 and WILL FM 90.9 HD3 Urbana.
Good morning. Security fears in Iraq have forced the government to temporarily shut down the infamous Abu Ghraib prison this week. The latest from Baghdad ahead in this hour of Morning Edition from NPR News. NPR's Alice Fordham reports on Sunni civilians in Iraq angry at the Shiite-dominated government now backing extremist fighters. I'm David Green.
And I'm Kelly McEvers. We'll go to South Korea, where rescuers continue to look for hundreds of people believed to be trapped in a sunken ferry. Also, celebrated author Gabriel Garcia Marquez has died. We'll visit his hometown in Colombia. And the star of BBC America's Orphan Black explains how she gets into each of the seven characters she plays. It's Friday, April 18th. Haley Mills of the original Parent Trap turns 68. The news is next.